We'll shut the door in 5 minutes. We'll give people. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshunditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapatantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Greetings from the Bhakti Center. I'm just afraid there if you won't be able to see this. You can see? Okay. All right, that's good. Champak, you can see?
Yes.
Okay. Just move a little bit in so there's a little space, just a drop in, just so people could walk by and get seats. That's enough. That's enough. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So the format of this class and the, you can hear me in the back? Yeah? And the style of my teaching is that I always go over what we studied before to put things in a proper context. And as I mentioned before, you can take this class in different ways. You can study in different ways. One way to study is devotional scholarship. You really try to understand the text deeply and how everything fits and remember everything. You'll certainly have an opportunity to do that. Another way is just the classical spiritual life. You're in the village of New York City and you come to hear and you listen in a prayerful mood for transformation and to learn various things. And it's really one of the main ways in which we transform. When you study because you want to change. And we discussed that yesterday in a bhakti sense, that change means is to purify the heart and make it more selfless and surrendered and devotional. And this is the process. If you hear something that knowledge is something like a pair of glasses, you know, really there's the world, but do we actually see the world? You know, people see it in so many ways. They see it as for their exploitation. They see it with hate. They see it with anger. Do we really see things properly? So what knowledge is, and a teacher is, it's like a pair of glasses. There's an object and there's your eyes, and then you put the glasses on, you see better. If you have the proper understanding, you get some jewels of knowledge and they resonate with you, and then you apply them in your life, you get a certain type of realization. The goal of bhakti is to actually understand reality and then to experience reality. And what reality is actually Krishna. Reality is God. Nothing is outside of that, of the divine. And because that absolute reality is being and person, to actually know that reality is to love that reality, to experience a person whom you have a relationship with is to love. It's just like when a mother gives birth to a child, because there's a natural relationship. As soon as the child is born, there's this love. We have this natural relationship with reality. And when we realize reality, Prabhupada said this to one of the purport, we'll be thrilled every moment because the love will come out of our heart. So this is the process. You sit and you hear and you try to understand, and then your life changes. And so I'm really happy to be able to afford this opportunity to study sacred texts, you know, and what we have to have a bhakti center for is really what should be a natural function of society. The main purpose of the bhakti center really is that people can get an opportunity to hear, as my godbrother Pradyumna said, to hear good ideas, to hear truth, and then to reflect on your life according to that truth, and then to try to see the world according to that truth, and then to actually develop Gyani Nas Tattva Darshana. Tattva Darshana. When you have knowledge, it's tattva. Tattva means reality. Darshana, you see reality. That's why we have teachers. And I made a point and that the goal of any process of self-improvement, whether it's psychology or spirituality, is to actually enable you to see what's there. In terms of psychology, see what's there. It's not, it doesn't exist. There are things that are there, but if you see them in the proper way, you'll feel better. So that's what sacred text is. That's what we call shastra is. It's knowledge. If you actually can see what's there, you'll feel better and you'll change your life. And a proper culture and a proper society, this is the main thing. Everything else is there, from fulfilling one's desires and organizing life properly, but for what purpose? I always quote that verse. What's that verse, Gail? Vedanta Tat? Come on. You got it, Gil. Okay. Vedanta tattva vidas, to know tattva, to know truth. And then to actually change your life, right? When you become upset with someone, why do you become upset with someone? Because they're not seeing truth. Or at least that's the reason why you think you're upset. And a lot of times it's actually true. Right? Why don't they see? how will they see? Well, you try to explain that to them. You grab them by the collar. You shake them. Why don't you see? So take the class, and I'm there as a resource in whatever way you want to take the class. If you want to learn this subject thoroughly, you know, that's there. We have the books that are there. And if you want to come and just learn more about bhakti and just hear about it and think about it, come on in. There's a seat there in the back. Okay, good. Yeah, I think the door could be shut now. We've given enough time. So the first thing what I'll do is, first I have to say also, yeah, I'm... what's called technologically challenged. It's funny how karma works. Certain things I have such a vision for, you know, put me in a festival and I'll see every detail that should be there. Welcome, come on in. And But technologically, I'm really challenged. It's a fact. I don't know how to put a kirtan on an iPhone after 10 years. And I'm trained by someone who is administrator in tech support in Harvard. It's actually useless. So anyway, I'm trying to get some help. Kadamba Mala is helping. We have a Facebook page, and the purpose of it is really we're putting up the videos of the class. Try to come live. If you can't make it 1 week, then definitely listen to the class, or it'll be audio. And sometimes we put some other things in it. There may be questions. So that's there. And what's that? That's good too. That's good. So, welcome. Come on in. Good. Thank you. And one of my biggest weaknesses when I give class is, I'll say it in the local vernacular, I don't shut up. I say there should be time for questions. I hope there will be. But once I get going, it's hard to stop it. But so what we're going to do is we're going to review what we did. So first the title, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's the title of the book. Bhakti means devotional service. I love that. It's a mood in the heart of selfless love for God, which is inclusive of everything, which manifests in doing something, even if it's just thinking. But it manifests in doing something. And rasa means the taste that you get from doing that. And you remember we had this discussion that everyone is impelled to action by some kind of taste that they have. And you can have taste for material things which are temporary and flickering and ultimately don't satisfy one. And therefore, on that sphere, you get into something and you give it up. You karma, you work and you get it. It doesn't satisfy you, and then you renounce it. That doesn't satisfy you. But bhakti ras, it's amrita. Amrita. Mrita means Murali Gopal. This a means not, right? And mrita means death. Yes. So it's immortal. It's the one thing you do that's connected to your real self. And I'll tell a little story about that. I always tell that now this is my 65th year. So I've had my ups and downs, and everyone is like that. One great saint in our tradition, Srila Gaur Govinda Maharaj, my godbrother, you know, he said, those who are fortunate will be unfortunate. Those who are unfortunate will be fortunate. Things change. Because we don't control the world, and we have a desire to fulfill all our desires, and we can't control the world. And sometimes the world moves rapidly against our desires, and that's called suffering. And we all have it. Sometimes it's kind of little. Sometimes it's big. Some building blew up on 2nd Street. Sometimes it's big. Where's my home? So I had my big explosions. Where the world moved. And I remember at that time I took shelter in chanting. And I would just chant and chant and chant. And I had this realization, that's bhakti ras. It's something that's coming from my real self, which is a devotee of Krishna, a devotee of God. It's coming from my real self. And I realized, who is doing that? That doesn't end. That's amrita. It's eternal. All the other things we do based on the false ego, which we may have to do, we do have to do, we're in these bodies, our desires have to be fulfilled. It's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to enter into reality which we have a relationship with, and that's called devotional service. So it's bhakti ras. Ras is also an aesthetic term, which means to become overwhelmed with emotion, like tragedy. There's karuna ras, bhaya ras, fear, hasya ras, laughter. There's all kinds. You become romantic feelings. This is the overwhelmed with the ultimate love of the ultimate reality, self-realization, experiencing God, feeling God, which is called prema, which is the eternal nature of the self. And sindhu means an ocean. So this book is going to be an ocean to explain bhakti ras, this flavor of devotion. And remember, we described also, because the author is Srila Rupa Goswami, who's one of the greatest poets of all time. And he didn't want to divide it into chapters. You know, everybody, you know, when you become perfect, you don't become one. It's like different shapes of metal. When you put them in fire, they become heat and light. They become one in one sense, but they maintain their shape. So the wonderful thing about bhakti is that we have different spiritual personalities. So I can see maybe he was a spiritual personality. He was aesthetic and he was like different. You can be different and still be one. He was different. And how was he different? He said, I'm not going to make this book into chapters because it's an ocean. I'm going to make it into an ocean. And there'll be sides of the ocean. There'll be an eastern side. There'll be a southern side, a western side, and a northern side. Andreas, I'm good. Please, come on in. Come in. Yes, seat there. No problem. We know people, they take time to come. A seat up there someplace? Or that's good. Okay, good. So there's an ocean, and he divided it into four subjects. The eastern division, when you're in New York, you always know the eastern division, varieties of devotional service. That's going to be our main study. Then the southern division is the components of rasa, is emotional components in your relationship with Krishna. There's actions in that relationship, unique to that relationship. There's a special type of mood in that. Anyway, he describes that. Then the Western Division will describe each relationship and how they're composed of these five bhavas, and then the Northern Division, just different subject. And he divided each of the sections into waves. Isn't that cool? Probably saying cool wasn't so cool, but anyway. I'm trying. What?
It's very cool to say cool.
Julie, thank you. So it has waves. It has waves. And the first wave is a general description of devotional service. Nectar devotion, that will be chapters 1 and 2. And then the second wave, which is chapters, actually it's the introduction in 1, which is chapters 2 through 15, is sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice. Describes all the different ways you can perform devotional service. Very interesting. And then the third wave, which is 17 and 18, is bhava bhakti, when you actually get real emotion, devotion in your heart. Something very, very special that descends from Krishna's internal potency. And then the fourth wave is prema bhakti, which is the goal. And what is the goal? The goal is you're so focused on the divine that there's nothing else in your consciousness. And that's the goal. the highest love, called love of Godhead. Okay, and then we had a bit of an introduction, and I described also Mangalacharanam means invoking auspiciousness. Every book where you really want to say something deeply, I went to the Gita class last night, Brave New Gita. The divine is so unlimited. If you really want to say something about it, you have to have some mercy. And if you want to really feel mercy and attract mercy, you got to be humble. If you want to be humble, you have to pray. So anyone who is writing a spiritual text is first going to pray. And Mangalacharanam classically has a verse that states the objective of the book, and then it offers obeisances to the guru, your teacher, all the Vaishnavas. It gives benedictions. I don't need to go out. If you have waves of devotion, which you can get downstairs, it will explain that again, very classic. And what Prabhupada did, which is amazing, he took the texts of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and then on each verse he wrote a paragraph geared to the audience of the Hare Krishna movement at the time that he was training. So it's very interesting. One paragraph represents one verse, and it's very beautiful how he does it, making it relevant. But anyway, I'm not going to go over that too much, but Waves of Devotion, which is a commentary on that, but you could read it also in the introduction. It has those verses. And yes, someone in the class even remembered something nice in their personal realization. They liked the analogy that devotees are like sharks. And, you know, Satyahari told me, what did you say about words in English for Sanskrit?
Oh, when we translate words, every word that's Western is pregnant with a history of,
right.
Of theology.
So sometimes you translate a word into English, but the English word has a history. Like, devotees are like sharks. But what it meant is it gave this analogy because the shark is so deep in the ocean and it doesn't care for the rivers. In other words, the goal is bhakti ras. And every other path is meant to come there. And then it said, the analogy the person gave, they liked that the sharks is deep in the ocean because what they felt is, I now have to go deeper in bhakti. I have to go to a level in bhakti now where I'm not so susceptible to all the modes of nature. And that's what happens. It's someone came to me just the other day about their struggles in devotional service, who became fairly committed, and they were talking about their struggles. And I said, yes, that's good. Because when you mature a bit, knowledge really changes your life. Hare Krishna. Can you, okay, yeah, come in. Okay, wrong class, okay. Champak, just come up and shut the door, okay? Okay, good. Shut the door, please, sir. Okay. And take a seat there. There's some seats over there. Okay.
That's good. That's good. You get deeper in understanding and knowledge. Knowledge reflects on your life. It's wonderful.
I have to change. So that's good. So she liked the analogy. Yeah, you have to go deep. So anyway, we won't go into that. Just this is like a review. And then the first verse, Rati, we can do, is, it's a whole verse, but especially this term was really nice. What is the objective of this book? And the objective of this book is Krishna. And the objective of Krishna is having a relationship with Krishna. So who is Krishna? Akila Rasamrita Murti. I love this. Murti means the embodiment. Akila means complete. Amrita means not only immortal, but it means nectar, right? Because when you there's an elixir, the nectar, you drink the drink that makes you immortal. So immortal and nectar is the nectar of Krishna is the complete embodiment of the nectar of all relationships. The highest manifestation of being is love. And love comes in relationships. So this is Krishna. The concept is very beautiful. Just think of a person that you don't know. You're analyzing them, but you don't know them. You saw them, but you don't know them. But then you have a relationship with them, and then you know them. What do you know? You know that they're either a lover. You know that they're either a friend. They're either a child, a parent. So the fullest conception of divinity, according to the Nectar of Devotion of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's not required to come to this class or to study this, that you have to accept their conclusions, but I'm going to state what they are. Akila Rasamrita Murti, that the complete embodiment of the nectar of all relationships. What is nectar? What is pleasure besides relationship? You can have everything in the world, but if you don't have relationship, you don't have anything. And what this book says is when you actually realize the full manifestation of the divine, there is relationship. You're a person, and you have a relationship with the divine. And that's what he is, the perfect manifestation of that. And we mentioned before, and that's what the Bhagavatam is. It describes the pastimes of Krishna. It describes the ultimate reality in this theology. And what is the ultimate reality? That you have a relationship with God, and that love is the supreme love. It's the essence of God's bliss potency. And you have rasa. You're overwhelmed with love. As much as you can think of becoming overwhelmed with any emotion. And that's who Krishna is. That's the fullest manifestation. And Prabhupada, he discusses it in a very interesting way. He said, think of a high court judge. He has a position, but his personality is covered. When he comes home, then his full self comes out. So the highest manifestation of being is not majesty, it's intimacy. So we say Krishna is the full manifestation of intimacy. It's a beautiful conception of divinity. And it really resonates and it really makes sense in one sense. Because our guiding principle here is that we want to be happy. And happiness is love. And if that's the guiding principle here, why reasonably should we deny that in the supreme absolute reality? One time this great Christian apologist, and apologist doesn't mean I'm sorry. It means someone who's actually qualified to defend a particular theological conception. And this person is probably the top one in the world, and he's very, very saintly. I saw a video of him. His name is Alvin Plantinga. He's old. He's in his late 80s. And so he was on some kind of interview, and someone asked him, is God a person? I loved his answer. God is not less than a person. So we may not be able to visualize it within our frame of reference, but it's not less than a person. Then we went on, and very important thing was a definition. Someone said, why don't you have the students memorize it? I think that's a great idea. But again, in this classical type of study, I'm going to deliver what I can according to my realization. You're free to take as much as you want. Some people have a propensity for this. It's nice in spiritual life sometimes to learn verses. They're impregnated with devotion and love and philosophical conceptions. Megan has a particular propensity to learn verses. So I'm sure she's learned the first verse. Okay. English?
When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desire, knowledge obtained from monistic philosophy, and fruitive actions. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably, as Krishna desires.
Okay, beautiful. I'll just go over it again because it's such a beautiful verse. It has a sarup lakshanam, which means the core meaning, and then it has a tatastha lakshanam, means the meaning which refines it, right? So this is the core meaning. What is bhakti? It's activity, shilanam, means mind, body, and words. It's uttama bhakti, the topmost devotion. And what can we want more in our hearts than the topmost devotion? The topmost devotion is activities that follow the desire of Krishna. Anu, to follow Krishna. Activities which follow Krishna. And if we look at it in a simple theological sense, we are part of something greater, and the part finds its meaning and satisfaction in relationship to its service to the whole. And I gave the example like a symphony orchestra. If that's the unit, then each person, no matter how talented they are, they try to find their, they follow the direction, and they're in harmony with the whole. And really, we can even look at that in a simple way. Everyone here ultimately wants to be guided by truth. Your individual desires may be truth, they may not be truth. Truth will decide if they're valid or not. But truth, something higher than ourselves, dictates what is best for us. Not our ego, not our whim, something higher than ourselves. And in the theological conception, that is God. And to become connected with that, that's the basis of bhakti. You just look, in your next day, so many things you're going to do, what should you do and why should you do it? And ultimately, because it's truth. Not relative truth, because it's absolute truth. And it's connected to the substance of being. But that's not enough. Because, at least in Krishna's pastimes, he's fighting. And there are demons that fulfill that desire. But it's not bhakti. Anukulyena means favorable. It must have the intention in the heart to follow Krishna's desire. Is that mine? Was it? No. Okay. So I don't have to punish myself. Okay, so anya bilashita shunyam gyanakar. So that's the core thing, the intention. And one person brought up a question. See, anu means to follow Krishna. And following Krishna means to be connected to Krishna's desire by those who love Krishna and therefore know Krishna. And that's called guru or guru parampara, the line of teachers. They carry the desire of Krishna. Because Krishna's desire comes in the sacred text. There's traditions of truth. There's people who've studied the truth, not only studied it, but lived it, realized it, and you become connected with it in that way. And then the purport Prabhupada said, and someone asked me this question, without initiation, you can't follow devotional service. And, you know, but What am I doing? What is bhakti? Well, look at it this way. What that initiation really means is really a humility and a surrender and a commitment that I will guide my life by truth. I will surrender to truth. And if you don't do that, if you're not at that platform, it's not the topmost bhakti. If it's sometimes I'll follow the truth, sometimes I'll do what I should be, sometimes I'll do this, that, whatever. But when it actually comes in the heart and really wanting to know what I should be doing, then it's a surrender. And the example that Prabhupada gives is very simple. It's like the body. The hand is part of the body. The hand has meaning, and the hand has energy and replenishment when it follows the dictation of the body. We're part of something greater. We're connected. So how to find that voice? Finding the voice of reality, like the conductor. How to find what my role is to create something beautiful beyond myself. How do I find the conductor? Find that. Well, it comes in the line of teachers. Beautiful picture in the back, don't, of Srila Prabhupada. He's my teacher. And he has a teacher. And that's what bhakti is. And it really means a change of identity that comes with commitment, actually. And a classic example was given, which I heard in a, I had this stack of interviews with the most learned scholar in Vrindavan that were all translated into English. It's fascinating. And so they asked him about this initiation, what it really means. And he said, it's just like in the traditional culture, a young girl has an identity. I am the daughter of my father. And then when she gets married, with the commitment comes a change of identity. I am the wife of my husband. So in the same way, that's what it's talking about. When is the commitment that I am the center of the world to I am the servant of the center. I am the controller to I am the lover, the servant of God and the divine. And isn't that a beautiful thing, actually speaking? You think of saintly people. And I was so fortunate to live in Vrindavan, where I met saintly people. It's such a beautiful thing. I'll tell one of my favorite stories in that regard. Years ago, in 1950, Prabhupada asked this one brahmachari in India, why don't you come with me to the West? So he said, I have to ask my guru. And his guru said, no, I need you here. Then his guru passed away, and then about 20 years ago, he shows up in the Brooklyn Temple. And I'm living there. And he was a very, very nice man. He would sit even when I would give class. And he was very elderly. And he became my friend. So in Vrindavan, a message came to me. My guru's festival of when he passed away from the world is today. And can you come? So I said, sure. So I went there. It was at the Gaudiya Math at the train, near the train station. It's a famous temple. And I went there, and I'm sitting downstairs with him, and he greets me. His name is Mangal Maharaj. And then he said, would you like to come upstairs? Would you like to come upstairs and see Prabhupada's godbrother, the older Puri Maharaj? Now, I know both Puri Maharajs. The younger Puri Maharaj was 93. And the older Puri Maharaj was 101. So I could say the older Puri Maharaj. So he's sitting there, and my God, you know what 101 is like? You're all like bent over, and your eyelids are coming over your eyes. And he's sitting there. Now, Nanda Dulal, you'll know this, that of all the groups in India, generally the Bengalis have the biggest appetites. Huh? Right? Especially at their monks. They take a thing of rice this big, and they stick their fist in it, and they pour dal, and they have some, I think it's the water there by the Ganga, whatever it is, but they're known. So it's Bengali, you know, ashram, and it's a fast day. So I'm sitting there, and this old man is sitting there, and I'm sitting and looking, and then someone comes in and says, it's time for the feast. All the devotees must come. Now envision like a stampede. Right? And I'm sitting there, and he said it in Bengali. I didn't know what was going on a little. So I kind of look up, and this old man is walking towards the stairs like this. And then his servant says to him, and it's translated to me, the servant says, Maharaj, where are you going? You know that we will bring the meal up to you. And he said, when the Vaishnavas command, I must obey. Humility. The person who is seeking to guide and move his life by a truth higher than his own whims. How beautiful is that? But as Satyahari said that our words are impregnated with the history. Like if we say surrender, we see like a bayonet in our back on a long march in like some island. But actually surrender is something else. It's when you want to serve and there's a desire out of love that is worthy to serve, and we move in that direction. And it moves our heart. So, bhakti means it is for Krishna, not for myself. And by being for Krishna, it's more for myself than I can do for myself. Because that's the nature of being connected to something higher than yourself. It's like a community. When you serve a community, you know, it's more pleasure than if you're in that group and saying, let me go to the front of the line and get my meal. You know, let me, you know, I'm so much in anxiety. I have to eat first. I have to take things first. Where is my things? I need this. That's not pleasure. Pleasure is when we find something higher than ourselves to serve that we're part of. And the highest thing is God, Krishna, which is inclusive of everything. And to be in harmony with that, that's bhakti. Okay, now we're going to go on. It's pretty nice. We're going to spend... No, we're missing one verse. Okay. What... Let's do Haribo. Represent us at the wedding. Thank you for coming. What? Okay, just catch the... I do. You know, okay, I got it. I was at the wedding. Okay, now, this is actually not part of the review, but it doesn't matter. So now what I'll do is I basically spend, and I'll do that every week, maybe a little less than half the class just reviewing everything so we're on the same page. And you can never hear these things enough. You know, you hear them again and again and again and again. And the nature of sacred text is newer and newer meanings come. Actually, I see that. So anyway, we're focusing now on the core thing, that what is bhakti? It's this feeling in the heart. Oh, can you go back there? No, back to the other one. Yeah. And that's the core definition, and it's modified, but it should not have any other desires that are your motive, without any desires that your motive, and it's not covered by philosophical speculation of fruitive activities. That's uttama bhakti. It's this intention to please God without any other interest, I would say, and not covered by any other activities. And the beautiful thing about it, and I was just reading this today, is that it doesn't look like a renunciate. It looks like a person in the world, actually, that he's just dedicated. And whatever he does, he may have family and business and job and things, but he can be uttama bhakti if he's connected. Is what I'm doing moving me towards the realization of myself and giving that realization to others? Okay, next. So now what happens is Rupa Goswami, he's a scholar, he gives other verses to support the definition. And if you know how this works, understanding, it's kind of like if you're sharpening an axe, you cut it from either side. So when you hear the different verses and the different understandings and things like that, it sharpens your meaning and understanding. So this is a famous verse. Sarvapati vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha shevanam bhakta uchite. So it's the same thing. What is sarvapati vinir muktam? This is without any other conditions. What is bhakti? Rishikena, rishikesha, sevanam. It's service with using our senses to the Lord of the senses. It's service. That's what bhakti is. It's service. Bhakti. This is called, uchite, called bhakti. It's seva, with the senses. We serve with our senses. To who? Rishikesh, who is controlling all the senses. And what? Sarvapati, without any other conditions. This term, upadi, it's very interesting. Upadi in Sanskrit means designations or degrees. When you go to the university, you get upadis. You get different degrees. I am MA. I am PhD. I have so much to cover, but I can't resist telling stories. You see, I used to, besides like the teacher, for 20 years I managed an institution in India. And, you know, in managing in India, one third of the time I was in the courts. So I have to go to the courts. And Prabhupada said there are so many lies spoken in the court of Mathura that they hang in the air as sinful activities and fall on the participants. So I used to go to the courts. You have to see an Indian court to believe it. So somehow or other, I had this big case coming out, and the judge sits here, and they have like the barriers here. They have the barriers here. And the lawyers sit on every side, and they called my star witness. And the star witness was my Brijabasi, the local accountant. And an Indian accountant, the way they do their job is they're never in their office, so they don't have to pay anything. So even though I was in charge, I could never get any money from the Indian accountant. This is the system. So he was real funky, and he was dressed like a Brijabasi in his dhoti, and he had like a knit hat, and he had a walrus mustache, and he's sitting here. And the other lawyer was from an English barrister, so he wanted to discredit my accountant because it was all based on the money and something like that. So he said, "What degree do you have?" And the term was upadi. What is your upadi? So the judge said, "Please answer that." He said, "Before I answer that question," the Brijabasi lawyer says, "Can I ask the learned barrister what his upadi is, what his degrees are?" So the lawyer says, "Well, I have an MA from the University of Allahabad in philosophy. I have a PhD in Sanskrit. I have a, you know, LLB from the, you know, Aligarh University. I have a barrister's degree and a, you know, an LLB, an MSD, and like whatever it is." So then the judge says, "Can you answer the question?" He said, what was the question? So they asked my bridge posse lawyer, they said, what degree do you have? He said, I have two more than him. And then he kind of like defiantly like. So that's just a story to keep you up, but I won the case. Really. Okay, so so it's service. What tat parat tvena means with devotion to the highest object. So it's service with the senses, to the controller of the senses, which is the highest object. Nirmalam means without any dirt. And sarvapati without any condition. So it's exactly parallel to that verse. It's bhakti is defined as service to the senses. It should be done with the intention of pleasing the Lord, free from any other desires, and unobstructed by any other conditions. That's what bhakti is. So you see, we hear it from another way. This is what we really want in our hearts, because it's the only thing that's going to satisfy us. That simple, beautiful, sadhu, saintly person that's just for others. That's the beautiful person. And that's the happy person. Okay, next verse. One below. And then he gives another verse which says the same thing. This is Lord Kapila Dev to his mother, my dear mother, those who are my pure devotees and have no desire for material benefit or philosophical speculation, have their minds so much engaged in my service that they are never interested in asking me for anything except to be engaged in my service. They do not even beg to live in my abode with me. And if you analyze that verse, and now I'm kind of have a conception of the class that I can't go into every detail, we won't cover everything, but it's so beautiful. Never asking for anything. I'll tell another story. I feel it's story time today. And they are relevant. I was in Mayapur in December of 1982. It's one of the big centers we have, but at that time it wasn't a big center, and I'm one of the maharajas, and I'm in front before the deities. And I look back, and who is in the Mangalarti? George Harrison. Should I throw that? I took breakfast with him that morning. Wow. Anyway, so afterwards, he's taken around the place. And at the time, there was a famous gardener there. And this place, Mayapur, there was no place more beautiful in the world. This person had the greenest thumb. He was just, I can't explain it when you would see it. Now they're building a big temple where the gardens were. The gardens will come later. It was so beautiful. And he was known all over Bengal for anything he did in gardens. So they take George Harrison around, and every time, but this person was very interesting because he was from Queens, New York, and he was a beatnik, but he had become a devotee. So he was like a beatnik. So he was such a cool guy. So George Harrison's taking him around and says, do you have this plant? And the guy can quote the Latin. And I don't know the Latin, I'll make it up now, but he would say, Daddy, afasafa duffel doffelis, Daddy, and he'd point to the plant. Then he'd ask another one, and he'd point to the plant. He'd ask another one, and he'd point to the plant. So at the end, they're just about finished, and George Harrison's hobby was gardening, and he had this place in Hawaii. So he asked the person, he said, why don't you come this summer? I'll pay your tickets. You can come and do some gardening by my place. I'll never forget his answer. He said, He said, "Daddy," that's the way beatniks used to talk. If you know that, okay, that's the way he used to talk. He said, "Daddy, I got bucks in the bank, and I got grapes in the cupboard." He said, "The only thing I could ask for is more service." Never asking this, because it's a taste. It's actually a faith in a sublimity, and that Krishnanu Shilanam, it's actually an energy that comes from God into your heart of his own bliss-loving potency. So it's pleasure, it's happiness. That's where someone's taste is. So this is the definition of bhakti. Okay? We can go on. Okay. Anyone have any questions? Okay. Yeah.
You mentioned previously that to know something is to love it, or to know someone is to love it. In the modern context, usually it's kind of the other way around. If you love something, if you have some kind of emotion towards something, then you're considered to be pious, or it's not really, you can't really know. It seems like that's a controversy.
No, there's two different types of knowing. One type of knowing is understanding. Come. You want to come to the class? In Vrindavan, she was my best student. She would sit in all my classes, and she would listen and then ask questions. But she's her father is the chief priest here, so she's very important service to do. Okay. Okay. I should mention also, I think I'm just going to go straight. If anyone does have to go to the bathroom, it's on the video. If you miss something, just walk out. There's no judgment or anything. Just go. I'm doing that rather than take an official break because I'm afraid to lose the momentum. And I also have a managerial advisor who... Okay. Is that okay? Is it too hot in here? It is? Is there air conditioning? We can turn it up a little bit. The window would get the noise. What? I think we'll have to sacrifice maybe a little air in here. Do you know where that is? Maybe. Do you know where that is, Sharon?
I think it's in here.
Okay, if we can turn that up a little bit, not too cold. I'm just... So wonderful, this text. Now what does is comes a verse. The other room had more air, right? And like that. I realized that each, 98.6 little heaters here. The thing is, we're on the roadside. You got that? Okay, are you ready? We'll continue to go. Satri, is that okay? Or is it okay?
Hot or cold, doesn't bother me.
I know for you, but the noise.
What noise? I worked in the subway.
Seriously. Okay, is there a little breeze coming?
There is.
Yeah, noise. With that.
Maybe open a little more. And open that a little more. Okay, that's good. Okay, hopefully it'll be a little bit.
Yes.
Okay, we're still on. Next week we'll be back in there. It gives a little bit more freedom. So now it's okay. It's going to discuss in detail what are the characteristics of Uttama Bhakti when you practice bhakti. It doesn't mean you have to be necessarily pure in heart, but when you are acting in a fixed way with your intentions. And it doesn't mean just chanting your meditation. When you're acting in your life,
characteristics when you are fixed on the will of God in a mood of wanting to please, or you have that intention in your heart, and you don't have any other motive in your life, and it's not covered by your philosophical speculation to become one with God or your fruitive activities. Jnana karma jnapika, we gave that definition of pure devotional service. It didn't say, it said not covered by jnana and karma. And what does not covered mean is that you naturally have to do work in the world. Naturally you have to do work in the world. But it doesn't cover it. Because we have so many duties that we have to do. But anyway, these are the characteristics of bhakti. Relief from material distress gives all auspiciousness. Moksha lagudakrit means it makes small the concept of liberation. It's rarely attained. It gives concentrated bliss, and it can control Krishna. And it's very interesting. These are the symptoms at different stages of bhakti. At the stage of practice, when you become fixed, this is what will happen. And when you get bhava, when you get legitimate spiritual emotion, then this is what will happen. And when you achieve the ultimate goal, which is prema, then all of these will manifest. So we'll study them one at a time. Okay? And maybe I will take a break and just for 5 minutes. And we will take a break, and then we can go. So I think that's okay. I'll go 10 more minutes and take a break. And then what I'll do is, it's kind of like in sports, if there's stoppage time, you can add it at the end. Okay? Is that okay? All right, let's go. Next one. Okay, so the Sanskrit is klesha agni. What is klesha? It's the troubles. It's the suffering. And agni means to destroy, to burn the suffering. So it gives relief from all material distress. And suffering is threefold. The root cause, of course, is ignorance. Those of you who studied the Yoga Sutras, that's classical. Ignorance is the root cause. Let's see. So that's the root cause, and then then there's material desires, selfish desires, and then there's reactions that we get. And you can get sinful reactions. Sometimes we have legal difficulty. On the doula, you remember that time of your life? And sometimes you get disease, etc. So we know basically karma. There's a law in the world that if you act selfishly, it'll create conditions in the future to free you from that selfish desire. That's what the law of karma is. It's God observing us and observing how we are acting against that beautiful nature of love and devotion,
and acting according to false ego, centering ourselves and trying to control everything around us. That core position of suffering, when God sees it in our activities, it's registered for us. And in the future, He'll create conditions that are specially geared to us to help us learn lessons to come to a higher platform of love and spirituality. So those are sinful reactions. And what Rupa Goswami is going to make the point that devotional service is the only process that can uproot all three, because it's the process that changes the identity that is the cause of all this. The identity that I am the center, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Bhakti instills in your heart the exact opposite conception that is the cause of all this, which is love for God and love for everything connected to God. So it gets really at the root, and all this that happens is only God's will to get you to that point of devotion, to get you to that point of selflessness. So when you actually embrace that point of selflessness, then God removes everything. Because that's the goal. God's goal is not just our suffering. His goal is creating. His goal is that we have the highest platform of love, where happiness is not coming to the self. Happiness is radiating from the self. And you won't get that as long as you have the false conception of life. You won't experience that, and you won't be happy. You'll always be in fear. Even if you attain the greatest thing in the world, because it's connected with, it's fearful, because you're going to lose it. And it's superficial, because it's not really touching the core self.
I wonder about the word sinful, because as we've been saying back and forth, the word has so many, so much baggage. Does it have to do with the yamas and niyamas, the way that we should treat others?
Going against the yamas and niyamas. I'm trying to figure out that the sinful really basically means to move against your core nature of service to God.
So
what moves against that is sinful, and you get reactions for that, which are called sinful reactions.
So it's not about hurting others. It's simply, if I'm indulging in the senses, is this a sinful action?
No, because you can. Bhakti also has sense pleasure. It's not just sense pleasure. It's the internal reason for it. For example, I'll give you an example. A cook can cook a wonderful meal for so many people. I in Vrindavan, where I used to stay, one service I had, besides everything else, is I was managing all the kitchens. And then there was this festival we had. It was separated by 3 or 4 days, Govardhan Puja, Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, where we were expected to cook an absolute gourmet feast for 1,500 people. Every preparation, and we had really no place to serve it. We didn't have gas stoves. The stoves were like wood and coal, and so I was in charge of this, organizing all of this. We didn't even have a place really to take at the temple, and it was really a complex operation. We didn't have one place. Buckets had to go on top of roofs, and it was very complex. What happened is, when the feast was finally served out, it had to be served out perfectly, so no one would be, everyone should feel, even if there's 1,500 people, that there's just 5 people being served. So when we'd finish it, I would sit with the cooks, and we would taste all the preparations. We wouldn't eat a lot, but what would we be tasting? How everyone else enjoyed. So it's really the inner condition of selfishness that actually is sinful. You know, and I think what he said, it's impregnated with history. If you grew up in the Catholic Church, this could be a big problem. You know, the way it works is like that with the words. I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind. But basically, sinful means to not act as a devotee, not act as a lover of God, a servant of God, a servant of others. It's that core selfishness, and there's a whole system to get rid of it. So when you actually develop the goal of the whole system, everything else is removed, according to the Bhakti theology. Yes?
I'm just
kind of
curious, where do you draw the line between self-preservation and simple reaction?
Because if, let's say, if you're using your hand to serve others, you take care of it, you clean it. So that's not selfish. And there's another factor. We do have desires, but if they're fulfilled to make us healthy for a higher objective, it's also not wrong. The example is one verse in the sacred text, the Shastras, it says, I don't need to go through the Sanskrit and everything, but basically the thing is, we don't live to eat, we eat to live. We don't live to enjoy, we enjoy to live. Because there's a purpose for life, and that's to realize the soul. Right? So we do have to take care of ourselves, and we have our own desires to become peaceful. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dharma Bhute Bhute Shu Kamasti Parthaja, that I am sex life. When it's used in the, you know, for the, you know, purpose, you know, for the proper purpose. Especially to, you know, to produce children and you know, that could be serving God. So we do have desires. And we need a peaceful mind. So a bhakti philosophy, and that's why it said anyabhilashita, without any other desires that are not selfish and motivated, because we can have other desires that are not. That we need. Yes, we need to take care. It said, the verse is, kamasyanendaya prita labo jivetiya, you take what you need. Kamasyanendaya prita, the goal is not the stimulation of the senses, but what about the senses? Take what you need. For what? Jivasya tattva jigasa. Because we want to realize truth in this life. We want to be happy. Okay? Okay, we'll go on. Okay, and basically there's two divisions. There's unmanifest and manifest. And this becomes a little bit scary. Because we have unlimited stock of reactions and lessons to learn. Unlimited stock of lessons to learn. Because we've been in this world since time immemorial. And you know what I read in the Yoga Sutras, that nice commentary by Professor Bryant, he describes that you can't fit them all in one life, because some are to be very rich and some are to be poor, some are to be beautiful, some are to be ugly, some are to be famous, some are to be defamed. You can't fit them all in the same life. So it's an incredible system. At the end of life, at the end of our very life, is a divine system. It's working under the daiva netrena of the supreme divine, that at the end of our life, a certain amount of this stock will be channeled into our next life, and a particular body will come. And then you'll get a false ego, a hankara, which will delimit the consciousness to a particular body. And you'll completely think you're that body. And with it will become a certain amount of reaction. And I have a theory that everyone's life is perfect in the sense that they get the set of experiences that they need to become perfect. if they can understand them, respond to them, learn from them. And I know myself, I look back at all my experiences where things didn't go my way, but they were for me. They didn't go my way, but they were for me. So everything is for us. All these, but unmanifest and then manifest. And then, you know, it's already manifest. You know, you have a bad stomach. It's already manifest. Or whatever the thing is. Someone may be, you know, really short. It's already manifest. Really tall. It's already manifest. So that's basically it. And then Rupa Goswami, what he did, and he wasn't just, you know, he's a great poet and wrote the most incredibly deep devotional poetry. They weren't just sitting chanting Hare Krishna all day. Lord Chaitanya sent them to Vrindavan to find all the holy places. And they were working. They had to clear roads because they were bringing in so many books and so many libraries, and they were studying it to establish devotional service from so many different. So this is Aparabdha. He quotes, "My dear Uddhava, devotional service in relation to me is like a blazing fire that can burn to ashes all the fuel of sinful activity supplied it." So if you actually develop that devotion and become fixed, that's it, you're liberated. Even that transcript I read from that great scholar, he said initiation is not just the fire and the form, you know, but it's that real commitment of deep surrender. Again, pregnated with words, surrender? Anybody used to watch Dolby Gillis? Okay, just so really, okay. one other. Well, anyway, there was a beatnik in it called Maynard G. Krebs. And the idea was that beatniks never worked. So anytime they said something like, you know, yeah, we have some work, he'd go, work! So that was the thing. Work! Every time you hear work, you go, work. So we hear surrender, we go, surrender! The term is actually sharanagati. It means we go to what is a shelter. We go to that place where we're completely maintained and protected, especially our heart. Because the main thing is our heart. We've actually found a place to repose our love, which actually satisfies us in heart completely. So it's like a blazing fire that can burn to ashes all the fuels of sinful activity supplied to it. The Bhagavatam. All Aparabdha karma is finished. Now what about Parabdha karma? That which is manifest already. So what about that which is manifest? So he quotes a verse, and this is really interesting. He says, "To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme Person face to face, even a person born in a family of dog-eaters immediately becomes eligible to perform Vedic sacrifice if he once utters the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or chants about him, hears about his pastimes, offers obeisances, or even remembers them." Basically, the nine practices of devotional service. This is very interesting. So what's the sinful activity? A low family. And in the Sanskrit, this is actually present tense. It's not like it happened in the past. He's there. Merely, we look at the Sanskrit. I'll show you the book I have. It's the present tense. He makes a point about that. And so he becomes eligible. His birth is no longer a disqualification. And if you know about Brahmin Vedic sacrifices and the qualification actually to be a Brahmin, Shamo, Damas, Dapo, Saucham, Shantir, Arjunam, Avijam, Gyanam, Vijnanam, Astikam, Brahma, Karmas,
their peaceful, tolerant self-control. So he whether he performs the sacrifice or not, that becomes a question, but the disqualification of birth is no longer there. He had a low birth. That's karma. Somehow or other, he was Bill Gates, but he had like a speck of poor karma, and then his next life, it goes, dog's breath. And then it becomes. Yeah, that's good. That would keep it nice. That's good. Okay, so... and we'll go on. For those engaged in bhakti and Vishnu step by step, the upper kutam bijam and parabdha are destroyed. This is Padma Purana, this 18th Purana. This is very interesting too, because what it describes is there's really this incredible cycle that goes on with us. Like we have this upper-upper, we've done something in the past, and when you do something, what happens is you get two reactions. One reaction is a condition will happen that will try to help you overcome that. And that's what we're experiencing now. We all know that the trials and tribulations of our life had a gift of realization for us. And so what happened? And then there's a reaction of a desire is planted for the same thing. So when I did this book, my assistant, Prajna Kishore, who was technologically competent, he made all these diagrams. It was very interesting. So you do something, and and then a reaction, a reaction gets subtly planted. So what kuta means, this is upper, this is not in this life. Then in this life you have a kind of a certain stock of reactions. And bija means they come to see. So let's say one way to look at it is, you know, you have a proclivity, but the desire may not always be there, then the desire will matter. And after the desire manifests, and you'll do something. Right? You'll do something. And then you become implicated again. And you'll get a reaction. So really, what spiritual life is about, what Dharma is about, this is a very, very important point, is when the sinful desires come, and it just doesn't have to mean the grossest, worst thing, but all those things that come that we know are not in our interest, if you're not in the practice of Dharma and some spiritual path and some hearing like this, then when it happens, it's going to come up into this desire. And if you're in a spiritual path, the desire will come out and you won't act on it. And what will happen is you'll start to become purified from everything. But if you act on it, then it's going to plant another desire and another reaction. And that'll be stored. Plus, the original desire still stays. You've increased the action, the proclivity and the desire. So it's really a serious thing. I don't want to scare anyone away from this class, but I never gave a class like this standing up, and I feel like marching across the podium. You know, like I could have, you know, like a great... But this, you know, and I'm thinking of this as I get older. Whatever I do gets put back in. And then it'll have to come out again. So, you know, good spiritual life is like a path of purifying. Now, I'm 65. It's finished.
Actually, I have to admit, people went around with Govardhan Hill with me walking. And others, I've left them in the dust. But I have to admit that this is the first year I now know what old age feels like. What's the deal? I know what it is. It's not just a temporary thing now. There's a certain condition of the body that kind of gets stiff and things like, you know, don't work as well and the whole thing. You know, and I realize it's such serious business, especially now when I'm kind of like really more free in the world from the work and the responsibilities and things. Even though I was a monk, I used to have to do so many things, managing things. It's like, I'm free and I'm watching and I understand if I keep on, you know, fulfilling all my impulses, they're just going to go back in and back in and back in, and then you go again and again and again and again. I have a chance now to do something with my life. With this path of bhakti, and especially getting to the core of actually becoming selfless and pure, and it doesn't not even mean in the heart, you know, when you actually make that kind of commitment, then it's finished. Even there may be desires, but if you have that kind of understanding. So it's a whole cycle. And Rupa Goswami says, they're destroyed if you're in the Vishnu Bhakti, it's destroyed. It's not like they say, like a thief, you know, let's say you steal something, you have a propensity that's against the yams and niyams, so then it's going to go up a rabda. And then in the future, what's going to happen is a desire is going to come, a proclivity, then the desire to steal, and then you're going to steal, and it's going to go back in, and a reaction is going to come, and it all gets stored. So I have to become serious. You know, I'm getting older. Okay, let's go. So we have 40 more minutes. Should we just kind of plow through and finish it?
Yes.
You have to go to the bathroom and just go and you can... okay, next one.
Mars?
Yes.
Maybe they didn't want a recording of the hell brimstone.
Okay. So, now, material desires. You see... There's so many things to neutralize the papam or the reactions. Like, reactions are coming, and you can neutralize the reactions, the papam, by austerity, charity, vows, and other methods. So you could, there's ways to do that, and people do that. They can counteract some of the parabdha, the papam, the reactions that have come. But the pious activities cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the personality of God, he's immediately freed from all such contamination. So you get to the desire. And it gets to the root cause. And the example that's given, that Prabhupada gives from the Bhagavatam. It's a very interesting example. There's a verse about an elephant bathing. Does anyone know about an elephant bathing?
Yeah.
It goes in the bath, and then as soon as it goes out, it throws the sand. So the example was given. Someone has... no control over their sex life and they get venereal disease. So that's the reaction. They're going against the yams and niyams. So they get a reaction from it and then they take a painful cure. So they can take the painful cure, but the desire is still there. And therefore you do the same thing again and again. So these type of things, they neutralize, but they really don't do anything because if the desire is there, you'll do it again.
and again and again and again. So it's saying bhakti gets to the core of it, of bija. We can go to the next one. Avidya, ignorance, and that's the root cause. Prabhupada says that that's what Prabhupada said. As long as one is ignorant of his identity, he is sure to act wrongly and thereby become entangled in material domination. If you have ignorance, you're going to do the wrong thing. And you'll become entangled. So pure devotional service, highest light, and when such a light is there, it is just like a blazing forest by killing all the inauspicious desires of ignorance. Pure devotional service, uttama bhakti, is when you have the desire to please Krishna, unmixed with anything else. And that intention is in your heart. That same intention is in your heart. And when you act on that platform, that's pure
devotion. So using whatever skills or talent you are.
Yeah, whatever it is, yeah. It's the desire, it's not necessarily the activities. I almost feel like we need a break, but it's at the wrong time, so we'll kind of plow through it. Because I myself am getting... Okay, next. So we're just... Okay. The second symptom is all auspiciousness. And the wise explain that there are four types of auspiciousness, and they are... I just want to... When you actually purify your heart, you're actually acting on this platform, and you can think of saintly people. They can benefit everyone. Because they can actually change your heart. There's no greater benefit than changing your heart. And they can attract everyone. They have affection for everyone, and everyone is attracted to them. And they possess all good qualities, and they have a superior type of happiness. Wow. There's four qualities that happen when you're actually fixed on the principle of... Your heart may not be pure, but when you're committed to the desire of God, you're connected to that, and you're following that, and that's your motive in your heart. Person. Right? So you can benefit everyone. If you want to benefit everyone, everyone is attracted, possession of all good qualities, and superior happiness. Okay? So this is the second quality. And these are all verses. A person who is engaged in devotional service and full Krishna consciousness, to be understood to be doing the best service to the whole world and pleasing to everyone in the world, in addition to human society, he's pleasing even to the trees and animals because they also become attracted to such a movement. And I'm going to sit down. Well, I think this Jimmy Swaggart stuff is a little...
You want some water?
No, I'll be okay. I'll be okay. I just want to, let me just read a little bit. Okay, we'll go. Prabhupada talks about Lord Chaitanya when he went to the Jarakanda forest. Has anybody ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that where all the animals stand?
Yeah. It's actually a fact. It's actually a principle of yoga that when one actually perfects ahimsa, and to perfect ahimsa, you have to have a pure heart, because as long as you have some selfish desire,
in one way or another, in your relationships, you're going to exploit someone. So when someone actually perfects ahimsa, it creates a psychological condition in the mind that it says even a mongoose and a cobra cannot fight before them. So what it's saying here is when you actually have that commitment to service and love of Godhead, I actually did need it. Well, I drank plenty of water today, but actually, maybe, I don't know, I told you that I was so fortunate when I came back from India that it's been a week now, and I didn't have a minute of jet lag. Mm-hmm. Not like a minute. Yeah, it's hitting now. So we'll all kind of plow through the rest. So one really becomes attractive when you actually have selflessness and purity in your heart. And what does that mean? Your mood in relationship to others is their needs. And when you actually have that in your heart, you know, first of all, you really can benefit everyone, because what benefits someone else, some benefits one more than anything else, is their heart. And your heart can only change in the association of someone. It can only change in the association of someone who has a pure heart. It's described later on that association with pure people is like a crystal ball. A crystal ball will reflect anything in its proximity. So your heart is like that. And if it's with a saintly person, it will reflect those qualities and that love and devotion. And there's nothing more valuable than actually changing our hearts. There's a famous song about the author of this book. I'll sing it. I'm even almost ready to go down here and keep the class interesting. Now I don't know if I'll remember the song. Gentle and ruffians. Dira, dira, janaprio, piakaro. They're dear to both the gentle and ruffians, niamatsaro, pujito, because niamatsaro, they have no hate in their heart. They have no envy in their heart. They want to help everyone, and they become so attractive. When Rupa Goswami's elder brother, who was the chief minister of a country and became a devotee and became very, very renounced, and he was in Vrindavan, and his service was, is that he would have to find all the holy places. And if you've ever been to Vrindavan, you know that it's not just what you see, it's what you feel. And when a person has a very pure heart, they'll feel the devotion and the place and the sense of it. So he used to, his job, his service was he walked from village to village. And he was so pure and so selfless that when he would leave the village, the whole village would follow him. So
This is bhakti. And so that's what that verse means. And everyone, and even the animals. And next. And this means good qualities. Prabhupada also summarized, Prabhupada said, persons who have unflinching faith in Krishna and without duplicity can develop all the good qualities of the demigods. Bhakti means without duplicity. Bhakti means sincerity. You know what the Latin derivative of the word sincerity is? It's a very interesting story. Cera means wax, and sin means sands without wax. So it comes from the time in the Renaissance when people were, you know, there was a high demand of marble. And because I lived in Vrindavan, they built Prabhupada's Samadhi, and we're an hour and a half from the Taj Mahal, and I have friends that work in that thing to build temples, that you pay for the quality of marble. So if marble is completely white, let's say it'll be $1,000 per cubic foot. If it has one little line in it, or a little shade of gray, then it's 500. If it's all, you know, it goes down. So when they're building the temples, they actually have people that are in the mines, and they'll bid on the marble, because it's not often that the pure white marble of the Taj Mahal will come up. So they'll bid on it. So when there was a demand, you know, you can imagine a greedy mine owner, he gets the piece of wax, and there's like a little black line. Hey, that's $500 per cubic foot I just lost. He would chip it out and put in white wax, and then he would sell it during the winter. But then when they built the temple and it would come out, and then the sun came out, it would melt, and people would say, I got cheated. So after a while, they wanted marble without wax. So it's called sincere. They wanted marble, which is just marble. And that's what pure bhakti is. It's love, which is just love. It's not that you do something, you serve God, but you have a motive for yourself. So there's no duplicity. Bhakti means honesty. I'm serving. Why? Because I want to please, not because I want to get anything for myself. That's what bhakti means. It's such a beautiful thing. And it says, a person who has that, he's fixed. You know, in yoga and in bhakti yoga, and I do this with classes on, you know, thank you, Bryn. You know how much that water did for me? When I do meditation classes, and, you know, we're chanting in different ways, and people are peaceful, and I ask them to feel the gratitude in their heart, and to feel that devotion that comes from spiritual practices, and that desire to give themselves, and to serve, and really the faith in that, and I say to live in that. Live in that. And that's what yoga means, right? It means to dwell in the self. To actually live in that. And I say, compare that to the false ego. Compare that to all the desires and things that just throw through the mind in our normal day. Compare it. So when it comes from that platform, you have all the qualities of the demigods, because the demigods are in charge of so many senses and so many things, they become your servants. And if you're not on that platform, even if you want to do good, it's going to be mixed with motive. So therefore, this is a famous verse. Megan, this is the next verse you read. Okay, fine. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat pakinchana sarvayunas tattas samasta de sara harava bhaktasya kata mahogina Mano rite dasati davata. Mano rite
If you're on the platform of ego, the mind is like a chariot. Even if supposedly you want to do good things, it's coming. So you said all the demigods and their exalted qualities become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Godhead. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional qualities, engagement has no good qualities. Even if he's adept at the practice of mystic yoga, the honest endeavor maintaining his family, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service. How can there be good qualities? Of course, there are good qualities when you follow Dharma and principles, even if you don't really have a conception of God, if you surrender the truth. But the basic idea is when you are developed that unalloyed devotion in your heart, and this is still at the level of practice, it's not even the level of perfection, then these things manifest. Okay, next. So there's three things, right? There's four qualities of shubha, auspiciousness. You want to help everyone and you can actually really benefit everyone. You attract everyone. You develop all good qualities, and you develop a superior type of happiness. So Rupa Goswami analyzes, you can get happiness from material enjoyment, from Brahman realization, and from Krishna consciousness, from bhakti. There's an interesting, you know this term, Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada got it from a Sanskrit term. It's a beautiful Sanskrit term. It's not like in the tradition, there was an English word, Krishna consciousness. I'll repeat it slowly, but it's beautiful. Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavato Lati. Lati means when the mind, or your opinion, or your ideas, or your thoughts, Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavato, are imbued with the mood of Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa, with the overwhelming feelings of your love and relationship for Krishna. When that's what your mind is, that's a particular type of happiness. Brahman realization, when you realize that the energy of God and your unity with the energy of God, that's a type of happiness. And material enjoyment, when you move something according to your desires to enjoy it, that's also a type of happiness. So he's analyzed the three. Next. I want to thank Bharati for doing this so clearly. It really helps the class. Astounding mystic powers, material enjoyment, eternal happiness and realization of Brahman, eternal bliss from the service of the Lord, all appear from bhakti. So he's going to make a point about happiness, that only the happiness of bhakti is eternal and inclusive of everything else. He says, even when you get Brahman realization, it's not the ultimate resting point. According to this theology, the ultimate resting point is when you... There's three types of knowledge. One, you know, you understand what is reality. Then you understand how do I... Every philosophy has three aspects. There's a conception of reality. There's a means of realizing reality, and then there's a description of the result of doing so. So in bhakti, reality is that there's a being, a God, who has energies. The means of realizing that is devotion. Because if God is a being, you can only realize a person in relationship with them. And the result of doing so is love. Existential love. And that's called prema. Prema is the attraction. So we have an attraction to the Supreme Absolute Reality, and that's the highest form of love. Okay? So, Lord Shiva, my dear wife, a person who surrendered himself to the lotus feet of Govinda, has developed pure Krishna consciousness, can very easily be awarded all perfections desired by the impersonalist. Beyond this, he can enjoy the happiness achieved by the pure devotees. In the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada does a very interesting thing. Because he realizes most people think that yoga and spiritual life is to attain siddhis, mystic perfections. So even though it's not in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, what Prabhupada does is he goes over all the mystic perfections. And if you grow up in India, you believe in mysticism. And all mysticism means is that certain people know subtle laws of nature that have not yet been discovered by modern science. And there actually is, and I'll tell you a story, because just to keep everyone alive and myself, the mystic perfections. There was a saint in Vrindavan named Shamsaki, and he was a Manipuri sadhu, very pure, and he had the mystic power to cure jaundice by mantras. And he would pour some water on you and the yellow would come out. And my friend, who's a magician, went there to check if he had any magic tricks, but he didn't. Because the people would get cured. And I was a little skeptical. And then one summer I was in South India, 48-hour train away from Vrindavan. And 3 or 4 days before I was about to come back, I lost my appetite. And then I started to sleep. And my nature is that I don't require much sleep. But I was just constantly nodding off. And being a little new in Krishna consciousness, I was condemning myself heavily. You are in Maya, Prabhu. I just conking out and conking out. And, well, what happened is finally I realized that I had jaundice. So someone told me, there's this housewife of someone I know who is a Pila Jornawala. Wala is the person, Jorna means to wash, and Pila means yellow. So I went to a doctor first. The doctor said, you have jaundice, you should not travel for 6 months. I said, but I got to go in 3 days. He said, it's dangerous. So I went to this lady, and she chanted some mantras, put some water in my eyes, the yellow came out. And 2 days I was eating samosas. I was cured. So there is mystic power, and Prabhupada lists them. It's kind of an interesting section if you want to. Anima city means you can, so small, you can enter into a stone. And Prapti city, you can obtain anything. Prabhupada tells the story that a mystic yogi came to his house. And all of a sudden, on his table was a broken branch with apples from Kashmir. So that's there. And there's so many. So it mentions all these Prapti city, Vashita city. You can speak all nonsense and control people's minds. Maybe Adolf Hitler may have had like a mystic city. So Prabhupada said, a German scholar once said that the so-called yogic perfections had already been achieved by modern scientists, and so he was not concerned with them. He intelligently went to India to learn how he could understand his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord by the means of bhakti, devotional service. So, we'll go on. And a quote by Prahlad Maharaj, I don't know if we have to cover that, but it's the same thing. And so, and Prabhupada speaks that what we think is auspicious is not auspicious. For example, university education. You know, people learn all, but they don't learn values and qualities. And you may be a professor, and you may be, you know, I had one philosophy professor, I remember, when I was studying university, and I noticed that there was these beautiful girls that they never came to class, but they always got the best grades. And one time in class, he said that happiness is sense gratification. I was just new, and I raised my hand. And I said, if happiness was sense gratification, then you could cure depression by an ice cream cone. But, so, the happiness of Krishna consciousness, it's eternal. The other happinesses are not eternal, and it's inclusive of all other happiness. Well, let's turn, we'll read that quote quickly. Back. My dear Lord, I repeatedly pray into your lotus feet that I may simply be stronger in devotional service. I simply pray that my Krishna consciousness may be strong and steady, because happiness derived of Krishna consciousness is so powerful that with it we can have all other perfections. Good. Okay. Now I'm going to really go quickly, because what I feel in this class, that please get my waves of devotion. All the notes are there, all that are there. I don't have to discuss every detail. It's more important that core points are understood. So we had, at the level of practice, uttama bhakti, when you're just trying to please Krishna without any desire, and your heart becomes purified, and you get bhakti, that feeling to serve and love God, and you're acting on it, and you're the anushilam, and you're connected to that desire, the telegraphic connection by the guru parampara, you're connected to that. You're guiding your life by that. Think of a saintly person. How are they moving? So when you're at level of practice, kleshagni, it destroys all distress, and the causes of distress are what? Avidya, ignorance, bijam, desire, and papam, sinful actions. He went that. Then it said shubhadats, auspicious. It means it can benefit everyone, it can attract everyone, it has all good qualities, and it's superior to any other happiness because it's eternal and exclusive. Now, the next one. Back, Rati. Back one. Moksha laguna krit. Lagu means to, this krita means to make small moksha. It means liberation becomes insignificant. And then there's different quotes about that. This is when you come to a platform of bhava by your practice, that you actually start to channel God's spiritual energy into your heart, and you start to develop your relationship with God, then even a little attraction to the Lord grows in the heart before objects of human attainment, and they become, those become insignificant. Prabhupada uses the word, what is it? You don't care a fig. Prabhupada said, go on. And they become the maidservants of devotion. All these other things that you want, they become the maidservants of devotion. So that's moksha laguna krit, makes it simple, let's go on. Then sudurlabha bhakti is rarely attained. At this level, it's difficult to attain, because if you do it without attachment, you won't get this bhava. It has to come to the level of attachment, of practice, real deep attachment. And if you don't come to that level, you won't get this bhava.
And in his practice, Krishna does not give it immediately because it's also an element of mercy. It's got to be given by God. And he will give it, but he'll show you that it's mercy and not your own effort. Okay, I'm going to go quickly. So by practice, he says, liberation easily obtained by the jnani and material enjoyment is easily attained by punya, such as sacrifice. However, bhava bhakti cannot be tamed if one practices so many things for thousands of years, unless you come to the level of real devotion and attachment. But in the same sense, by the practices, you go there. We're going to go quick. And he's reluctant to give it, and basically he's reluctant to give it because when you get it, you can control God. God has a bliss potency. And you become controlled by that which you are attracted to. God has a bliss potency, an internal potency of love. And if he puts it in your heart, he becomes your servant because that's what love means. And if God is the supreme person, he's not just the object of love, but he himself loves. And when you love, you get control. So when you have that type of love in your heart, you control God. And therefore, he doesn't give it very, very easily. We'll go on. And this is at prema. It says sunder means like steel. Nothing can get through it. It's condensed bliss. It's the nature of condensed bliss. And it says, if the bliss, that material enjoyment is nothing to the bliss of moksha or liberation, but if you multiply Brahman realization by a trillionfold, it won't equal the drop of the happiness of bhakti. Listen to the theological concept that God has a bliss potency, which is love. So if it's God's love, what does that mean? How great can that be? And how much pleasure can that be? We'll go on. And that's another verse about that. And then finally, we'll keep on going. Sri Krishna Parchini, it attracts Krishna at the level of prema. It actually attracts Krishna. And the example is given, and Prabhupada discusses it. You can read it in the purport. He talks that Krishna is known as Madan Mohan. Okay, we have a little Leela now. I'm conscious of the clock, and I want to do that free writing again because I think we have to. So, Cupid tries to get Krishna. So Krishna's in his threefold bending form. He's playing his flute, and Cupid takes his arrow, and he's going to shoot him in the heart, but you have to take aim, and Cupid is taking aim at Krishna, and then what happens? Krishna is so beautiful that he goes, oh. And Krishna comes proud. I am Madan Mohan. I have conquered Cupid. And then Krishna was, I have conquered Cupid. And then Radhe, Radhe,
Govinda, Govinda, Radhe,
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 Govinda, Govinda, Radhe.
Radharani walks by, Krishna goes. So Radharani becomes known as Madan
Mohan
Mohini, the bewilderer of the bewilderer of Cupid. So what devotion is Radha's energy. And if that energy of Radha enters your heart, you control Krishna. Krishna has 26 qualities, like his beauty, the beauty of his eyes, the feet, the beauty of a blue lotus, the beauty of his face, the feet, a forest of blue lotuses, and the luster of his body brim, puts gold in a painful condition. The 26th quality of Radha is she always keeps Krishna under control. So at the level. So every class, I'll review this. That's why I'm not, I have to go every,
I like to get into things deeply, you know, and if you want, you can look at it again. But if you read, I have notes on it called The Waves of Devotion. Within 10, 15 minutes, you can read everything again. So what I'd like to do now is to finish, get a pen and a paper. And this is called free writing. It's only for yourself. You don't have to look at notes or anything. It means you just keep the pen moving. And even if you say, I don't know, I don't remember everything, just keep the pen moving. But see what you remember from the class. If you look at your notes, you'll only get mental and the real stuff won't come out. Just start writing what you remember from the class. Okay? We'll do this for 5 minutes. Just keep the pen moving. Just keep the pen moving. A good way to just bring out, realize something applied. Just keep the pen moving. Even if you don't know what to say, don't think. Just keep the pen moving. It's only for yourself. If you stop the pen, you won't remember anything. Watching the clock. Okay, stop. Underline one thing that you wrote. All for yourself. Doesn't have to share. Underline one thing. Then turn to a partner in twos or threes. And... and discuss between you what you like about the class, what did you Everybody look up. My nature is to be on time. Because I realize that people have really given their valuable time here to participate in the course. And people generally make schedules in their lives to fit it in. And it's not Vrindavan where no one works. So just a few things to and if you're interested in the class, we have a Facebook page and somehow, if I don't have your email, you should give it to me, and I'll show you how you can actually access it. And what we're going to do is we put an audio of the class.